Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bring Other Podcasts. As always, I'm your host, Luke Thompson, here with Eric Rubottom. Eric, how are you feeling
today? I am feeling spectacular. We had no business at the beginning, before the season started, even talking NCAA tournament. And here we are, a high seed. I can't wait. Let's get this on.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Kansas State playing the Montana State Bobcats on Friday. And we might get into the difference between Wildcats and Bobcats because I actually looked that up a little bit. But first, we're going to talk some basketball. And so we've got here with us Parker Cotton, the sports editor at the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. Parker, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Like I told you before we got on the call, it's a little snowy here, and I'm worried about my flight getting out this early Wednesday morning. But otherwise, doing pretty good. Excited to be going to the NCAA tournament again.
Yeah, Kansas State. Unfortunately, the late struggles, maybe you want to call them that, and then Marquette also making a surge, that means Kansas State's going to Greensboro instead of Des Moines or Denver. But, you know, like Eric said, just happy to watch K-State play. Now, Montana State, on the other hand, last year, this is their second straight year making it. Last year was their first trip since 1996. Is it a different vibe this year? Maybe like less of a happy to be here situation?
I wouldn't say that. There's plenty of back-to-back guys still on this team, though last year's team did lose a couple of key contributors, most specifically point guard Xavier Bishop, along with some wing players, Amin Adamu and Abdul Muhammad. But there's plenty of guys who were here for both trips, guys like Jabril Bello and Tyler Patterson, Raekwon Battle, Great Osabor, all names who are probably going to come up later in this conversation. I think everybody still felt the same sense of accomplishment as last year, but then there's also three transfer guys on this team who we can get into later who had never played at the NCAA tournament before. And, you know, they were among the most excited, and some of the teammates were most excited for them also that they get to experience this. So there's a good mix of, you know, knowing what this feels like and getting to experience this for the first time. And I think that's a good way for a team to be.
Yeah. And this team is, you know, kind of like everybody. They've got a bunch of transfers. They're kind of leading the way. They've got some experienced guards. The one that really stands out, you mentioned him already, is UW transfer Raekwon Battle. And he's a first teamer, but he's not really your typical big guy guard. Comes from Washington and was a 4-star player. What can Kansas State expect to see from him? Does he have that Power 5 athleticism?
He definitely does. He has some athleticism that the Big Sky and Bozeman certainly doesn't often see. At Washington, I think he was kind of pigeonholed into being something of a spot-up shooter. And I'm sure you'll be able to see on Friday a little bit that, you know, when the ball is in his hands, he can create so much of his own shot, you know, going to the basket or fading away. He can score at all three levels. You can definitely see how he ended up in a Pac-12 school. Granted, he's from that northern Seattle area, and Washington was his dream school. It just wasn't maybe the right role for him. Montana State has been using him a lot better, and you know, using the full breadth of his skill set. And that's one of the primary reasons why they're here.
And so with that, is he, you know, their best defensive player as well? Will he maybe get the Keontae Johnson assignment, or do they have somebody else?
No, I think Raekwon Battle might be a little too frail to take on Keontae Johnson, just based on what I know of. One of the pieces of that athleticism is that he can jump very high, and you'll see that a lot on dunks, but also with some blocks at times. But I imagine that Keontae Johnson is 6'6" or so, I think I saw. I imagine,
and he's built like a linebacker. So
yeah, I imagine maybe that defensive assignment will maybe at the start go to Caleb Fuller, the 6'5" that transferred in this year from UC Davis. He's one of their best defenders in that he can switch 1 through 4, maybe switch 1 through 5 depending on how tall the 5 is. Potentially, Great Osabor ends up on Keontae Johnson as well. He's a little bit taller. He's 6'9", but he's got really good footwork on that end, despite being just a sophomore and being that tall. I imagine that Keontae Johnson will be something of a similar cover as Weber State's Dylan Jones, who is a really tremendous sophomore at Weber State, who probably should have been the MVP of the league in the Big Sky this year, but was not. But he can do a little bit of everything. And in the Big Sky semifinal game, Dylan Jones was shadowed a lot by Fuller and Osabor. I would maybe expect something similar against Kansas State.
Yeah, I don't know. And a quick shout out, though. I just gotta say, I just wrote a story actually for our local paper here in Yakima about the MVP of the league, Steel Venters, and he had a great game last night at Washington State. So
he did, and I don't want to take anything away from Steel Venters. The best player on the best team is mm-hmm. good reasoning for an MVP award. Just a personal opinion. I thought Dylan Jones did a little bit more throughout the year.
Sure.
To affect winning, but probably not a real bad pick either way.
Yeah, yeah. And real quick on Raekwon Battle, and you know, people, I would encourage them to go to BosemDailyChronicle.com, read your full story. But he's got kind of a cool personal story as well. Can you give us the cliff notes on that?
Yeah, he's the only member of the Tulalip Reservation in Washington to have ever earned a Division I basketball scholarship. So he has that to his name. His native origins are very, very important to him. And that's one of the things that he's also found at Montana State, where in addition to fitting in better on the basketball court, he is fitting in a little bit more in the community. He's become a real fan favorite, both for native fans and for non-native fans alike. But that part of him, that non-athlete part of him, is a little bit more fulfilled here from what I can tell.
Yeah. So, Eric, I mean, you think that's a guy that K-State sticks Desi Seals on him, get up in his career a little bit?
Yeah, I think Desi's a good guy to put on him. You know, Cam Carter, actually, yeah, is another good fit there. You know, Cam, the Raekwon being 6'5", you know, a little bit taller guard there. You know, Desi's not exactly a tall dude. Obviously it's not a Marquise matchup or anything like that.
Right.
So, I like it. Actually, Cam Carter matching up with him. Cam can, is a little bit taller, has a little bit more length. But I think the combination of those two guys, throwing those two guys at him constantly, I think it might rattle him a little bit. Desi's a little bit, you know, stronger on ball defender, going to pester him a little bit more. Cam's going to just, you know, I'll say limit him a little bit more as opposed to being that pestering type defender. Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, the matchup I may be a little more worried about for Kansas State is the last year's Big Sky MVP, Drew Brialbello, 6'9", 240, seems like kind of the type of big physical presence that has given Kansas State some issues, you know, this year. What kind of damage can he do in the paint?
That's a good question. Last year, he was definitely deserving of that Big Sky MVP. He also won Defensive Player of the Year. He had 60 blocks last year also, which I think was either first or second in a season in school history. This year, he has surpassed the school record in blocks, so I think he now has 160 in his career. He's also one of 5 I think one of five players to eclipse 1,600 career points at Montana State. So he's over the course of 4 years, he's become, you know, one of the more decorated and successful players that Montana State has had. He was injured at the very end of last year in one of the final regular season games. He had a right knee injury. I'm not entirely sure the nature of that, but it did require surgery the day after the NCAA tournament game against Texas Tech. So he was not at all himself in that game, where I think he had 5 points in 25 minutes. Okay. Granted, Texas Tech was one of the best defensive teams in the country. So like those things compound into not working out very well. Mm-hmm. This year, I think he still feels a little slower, but I think he has shown some impressive boost at times. He doesn't have nearly as many blocks this year, but he's so skilled in the paint, and this kind of goes for Osabor too. They are almost carbon copies of each other, which is really exciting for Montana State fans. But yeah, Osabor has just been here a long time and is a load to handle in the paint. He gets fouled a lot. Whether those whistles are actually called or not is, you know, up for debate. But he takes a beating, and for him to come back, not only from the surgery in the off season, but each game after kind of the, how many hits he takes each night, has been really impressive. And I know that he's really excited to be going into this NCAA tournament much healthier than he was last year. And, I would expect him to play a little bit more like that too.
Yeah. Yeah, Eric, I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about these big guys inside. Do you think K-State's gotten any better at defending against those type of players?
I think that I don't necessarily know that we've gotten a whole lot better. I think it's the type of big guy that we're going to run into that's more of the issue. You know, I think that if I would be a little bit more concerned if we were talking about a player that was a little bit more, I'm going to say Eddie Lampkin. You know, a big dude, right? You know, 6'9", 240 isn't necessarily out of line with the size of the guys that we're going to be throwing at him. And we're going to, I mean, legitimately be throwing three guys at him, you know, rotating through between Naquan Tomlin and David Gasson and Bebe. You know, all those guys are going to be able to match up with him size-wise. They are giving up a couple of pounds to him, but it's, you know, it's not like we're playing, it's not like we've got guys that are 220, 225, 230 playing against a guy that's going to be, you know, 260, 265, something like that. I think we'll be able to hold our own in there. The real key for me is just going to be, you know, let's see some fundamental rebounding, you know, at the end of the day. When we start breaking down on the interior is when we're just not keeping people off the glass. So a focus on that, and I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. And Bello is the Montana State's leading rebounder at 6.1 per game, but it seems like maybe more of a team effort rebounding. They don't have any one guy that's putting up huge numbers.
Right. He's definitely the leader there, probably by virtue of just maybe playing the most minutes. But even with minutes, I don't have it in front of me, but he's probably maxing out at, you know, 20-something per game. But then again, that's where Osabor comes in. Sometimes they play them together. Osabor averages 4.5. The point guard Darius Brown, the second, averages 4.5 rebounds per game. Also, I'm really excited about him and seeing what he can do on this stage. Also, because last year Montana State had a really short point guard. Darius Brown is a little bit taller and has a little bit more build to him. He averages 9 points a game. He's I think fifth in the country in assist to turnover ratio. He can rebound the ball really well. They trust him with a lot, and he follows through. But as far as the rebounding, yeah, it is kind of a collective effort.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting matchup at point guard. Darius Brown, the Cal State Northridge transfer. And like you said, he's a lot taller than Marquise Noel is. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how, if he tries to take advantage of that size. He's also shooting 40% from three. Is that mostly catch and shoot, or is he creating his own shot from out there?
It kind of depends. He definitely can create his own shot. I think maybe from outside, it's maybe a little bit more set shots. I think maybe most of those are from kickouts or skip passes, something along those lines. He can create a shot from outside, but I wouldn't say that is what he's relying on. He's much better at creating his shot inside, kind of getting to the basket, maybe in the mid-range, kind of a very classic kind of point guard game to him. He's got a little bit of old man game in him, I'd say.
Okay.
Which is a compliment for sure.
Yeah. One thing that's kind of standing out to me that I wanted to jump into here, just offensive style for Montana State. You know, I'm just going through season stats. I haven't, I admittedly haven't done a lot of research into Montana State at this point. But it doesn't look like it's a very three heavy offense. Just looking
at I think they're dead last in the Big Sky and made three pointers.
Well, made three pointers, even attempted three pointers, you know, attempted three pointers. We played two fewer games and shot 25 more three pointers than Montana State did in the season. So it looks like it's a little bit more focused on scoring inside the arc as opposed to, you know, really, really trying to leverage that 3-point shot. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's really accurate. It's something that I myself have been concerned about over the course of the year, having watched all of last season and kind of seeing how they've progressed or changed, maybe it's a better word. These have been the only 2 years I've been in Bozeman covering this team. So it's just easy to compare the first season to the next season. You're absolutely right. I did write this down because in anticipation of this coming up, they've attempted 621 three-pointers this year, made 210. So that's about 34% to generously round up. Last year, they attempted 729 three-pointers and made 268, which is a little bit closer to 37%. So they've dropped in attempts, makes, of course, and efficiency. But I've been proven wrong a lot in how much this matters in the last part of the season because, as you mentioned, they score so much inside. And a lot of that comes with how much they're getting to the line. I wrote this down also. See, you're there. 23.4 free throw attempts per game. That's ninth in Division One, and they're making almost 76% of them, which is 37th in Division One. I also looked this up. It seems that Kansas State is 244th in fouls per game in Division One. So maybe there's something there that Montana State fans can hold on to, or Kansas State fans have to worry about. But near the end of the regular season, Montana State sets three consecutive lows in field goals made, you know, in each of those three games, but they won them all in virtue by attempting like 30 free throws in each of them or something, something along those lines. And I kept asking, like, is this a concern? And I kept being told no, because this is how they want to play. They want to get the ball down in deep to Bello and Osabor, and they want Battle to drive. They want Brown to drive. Tyler Patterson is really the biggest spot up shooter this team has. He hasn't been shooting as well this year, but yeah, they're really not focusing a whole lot on the 3-point shot, and it's gotten this far. It's gotten them this far, and I guess it really doesn't matter what I think at this point.
Well, you know, Kansas State's last game, the worst 3-point shooting team in the Big 12, hit a season high 11 to knock K-State out of the Big 12 tournament. So you never know.
It felt like they shot about 94% from beyond. Yeah. It was just like, oh, all right, man, if this is going to happen, cool.
Yeah.
That's how last year's NCAA tournament game against Texas Tech felt, where, of course, the Red Raiders had the best defense in the country, and then they shoot, I don't know, like 67% in the first half against Montana State. And afterward, you know, Danny Sprinkle, the head coach of the Bobcats, is just like, I don't know where that came from. They hadn't done that all year. We knew the defense was going to be good, but, you know, their defense was, you know, just couldn't match up with being the hottest team on the right day. And as far as this year goes, Danny Sprinkle still thinks that they have, you know, a breakout game from outside in them. It just hasn't come yet. And maybe that's Friday. I don't know. That's kind of their last chance to do it. But to this point, it hasn't hindered them too much.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, besides that TCU game, or, you know, even with that, Kansas State is the best 3-point shooting percentage defense in the Big 12. So they've been pretty good at defending the line most of the time. But yeah, when it's bad, it feels like it's really bad. But
people just make shots. They make shots. You know,
it sucks. I know. It
happens.
Yeah.
I'm also again, too. I'm also curious to know just about kind of, I'll say this, the tempo that Montana State plays at. It doesn't look like it's a very fast tempo. That would corroborate with the fact that you don't have that you're relatively that you've had, you know, relatively low outputs on number of threes attempted and that sort of thing. Because usually, for whatever reasons, you know, the number of 3 points that 3-point shots that are attempted is kind of a relation to the tempo that you play at. Is Montana State a team that is susceptible to getting sped up?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure. Not that I would not that I've seen this year. There's certainly, you know, some teams that try to, you know, put a press on them, and, you know, Big 12 bodies are not Big Sky bodies. So I guess maybe we'll see, but you know, they do have you know, a backup point guard, Robert Ford, III, who's an Idaho State transferred within the Big Sky. They sometimes like to play him and Brown together. Those two can typically break a press. They have some of the better qualities of point guards and that you can get where you need to go. Raekwon Battle, also a worthy ball handler, able to help with those efforts. Being sped up full time, I'm not entirely sure. Probably because I haven't seen it. I think Montana State likes to dictate that pace, and you know, if their offense isn't you know, putting together the same kind of, or maybe the, what's the best way to say this? If they're not putting together the most amount of points that maybe you would think, they have a defense that'll win them games. And this kind of goes back to, you know, if you're not shooting a lot of threes, if you're not making a lot of shots from the field, they're hitting a lot of free throws, and their defense has won them a lot of games. They were the best defensive team in the Big Sky all year long. And that has saved them from not having the best offense. I think that they are much better this year on ball, and probably a little bit better in rotating. And I think that helps slow their opponents down if they do want to go faster. I can't say with certainty how often other teams tried to go, you know, too much faster. So I feel like I'm rambling at this point, so I'll end there. But it's a big kind of up in the air at this point, I'd say.
And I wanted to ask, you mentioned Tyler Patterson, and he's listed as a 6'8 guard, which is interesting. You said he plays on the perimeter a lot. And it kind of also just underscores the point that on the perimeter, Montana State is noticeably taller than Kansas State. I mean, do you think that's something that the Patterson or other guys might try to take advantage of?
Tough to say. Tyler Patterson is built kind of like Raekwon Battle in that he's still a little frail. You know, that said, I should give MSU players credit, at least the ones that were there for the tournament game last year. They all saw the Texas Tech bodies that they were going up against, and they tried their hardest in the offseason to get into the weight room a little bit more, bulk up a little bit more. And some of those guys are noticeable, and one of them is Tyler Patterson. But even being a little bit bulkier, that hasn't changed his game a whole lot. He's, with all respect to him, I really like him. He's a great kid to talk to, and I think a really good basketball player. He's not the best on-ball defender, for one, and he hasn't shot the ball as well this year as he did last year, which is really unfortunate. I think MSU has really missed that. To take advantage on the perimeter, he's not creating his own shot. He is like the spot up guy on this team. I don't know how many two-pointers he's attempted this season. I don't know how many of them he's made. He doesn't get a whole lot of rebounds. The thing that he's going to need to be able to do is hit some shots from the outside. It'll be up to his teammates mostly to get him those opportunities.
Okay, so yeah, you mentioned him as a weak link on defense, but let's talk about the team's defense first. We're going to take a quick commercial break here from our sponsors. So yeah, it does seem like defense is this team's biggest strength. You look at the KenPom numbers, they're about 100 ranks ahead defensively of where they are offensively. So has that kind of been what they've relied on all season, and what are they bringing? Is it mostly man-to-man? Do they play any zone?
Yeah, I'd say mostly man-to-man. I think they like that. I think they're able to switch a little bit with the personnel that they have. I think they're comfortable with that. As I said before, you know, their offensive struggles have or offensive differences, I guess, maybe if you want to call them, have made it so that sometimes they really need to rely on that defense. And they've been able to do that because there are times when that offense goes 4 or 5 minutes without a made shot from the field. They're attempting shots, but they're also getting fouled and they're getting points from the line. Eventually they're going to have to hit shots from the field. This is the hill I'm going to die on, I suppose. But each and every time they've leaned on their defense. Their semifinal game in the Big Sky Conference tournament was very, very low scoring against Weber State. They won that in double overtime by 2 points, 60-58. It was not the best display of offense either way. Weber State also went pretty cold, and it's just going to be maybe a matter of time until maybe they can't rely on the defense any longer. But to this point, I mean, you want to make it to the NCAA tournament. Everybody wants to make it to the NCAA tournament. The defense is definitely the biggest reason why they got here.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think the biggest concern looking at some of the defensive numbers for Kansas State fans, it's probably that Montana State averages, I think it's 13.7 turnovers per game that they force. That has been an issue at times for Kansas State. Just, you know, what is Montana State doing defensively to force those turnovers? How much pressure are they putting on teams?
It starts with Darius Brown II. He was the Big Sky's defensive player of the year this year, and that's for being a year after Jabril Bello won it. Like I said, Bello isn't maybe the same defensive presence in terms of blocks this year, but he's still a big guy to score over, and that's not easy for anybody. But up front, it really starts with Brown hassling the ball handler. Robert Ford III also does a really good job of that. He's a little bit shorter, but I know this has become kind of a tongue-in-cheek saying to use, but Danny Sprinkle used it after the Big Sky conference. He said that Robert Ford has that dog in him, and he loves to compete, and he really does. He is pesky, and he will get up on guys. At the very least, it starts with those two guards up front trying to make it difficult.
Yeah. So, Eric, I think maybe, you know, like a lot of times this year, the big key is kind of be just how well can Marquise take care of the ball. We saw 500 turnovers in his last game, but he's also had some phenomenal games taking care of the ball. So,
yeah. Well, it's just and a lot of that really doesn't – I don't think it's forced by the defense. It's just, you know, it's just, is he locked in and making good decisions or not? You know, and a lot of his bad decisions, you know, air quotes, are stuff like, it's not necessarily a bad decision, but it's a risky play. You know what I mean? So one of the things that I noticed against when we played TCU in the Big 12 championship, and this might sound really weird, but being a basketball player myself, in my opinion, it has a lot to do with things is the ball. Okay. The, you know, home games, you get to play with your ball. You go on the road, you play with the other team's ball. You go these neutral site games, everybody plays with the same ball, but there was something about the way the ball was bouncing against TCU, just the way it was hitting people's hands, the way it was hitting the floor and everything like that, that it just looked like the ball was super bouncy compared to what you might get used to, you know, playing at home or what you might see on the road or that sort of thing. And honestly, it looked like that was leading to some of those turnovers. You know, like they were good passes. They hit the guys in the hands and just fumbling it around and that sort of thing. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think if we can keep the turnovers in check and make, you know, and actually, you know, secure the basketball and that sort of thing. I think I think that's going to be the key for us is actually making sure that we don't let the defense turn it into an isolation game or a two-man game, and we're actually able to use all five guys on the floor. You know, that's one of K-State's strengths, I think, is actually ball movement, assists. We're top 15 in the country, I think, in assists per game, something like that.
That's when your point guard averages 8 a game. But yeah,
right. So it's you know, I think as long as we can keep the turnovers in check, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. And so, Parker, I mean, obviously, you know, Montana State hasn't seen anybody like Marquise Noel because he's kind of one of one, just the way that he plays at his size. But have they seen, you know, the kind of point guard who can create, you know, and dish as well as he does? And also, I mean, a guy obviously who's not afraid to shoot from anywhere.
Sure. This season is tough to say. They face some really good teams. You know, they play it at Arizona, you know, of course, who is in the tournament. Yeah. They play it at Oregon, who I don't think is in the tournament, but is still a really good team.
SNNT team.
Yeah. They played at Grand Canyon, who's a really good team at the very start of the season and is now a tournament team. They had that game, you know, not won, but they were really competitive deep into the second half, and they just kind of let that lead slip away. To be honest, no immediate names are coming to mind of point guards for those teams because they were all out of conference and all so long ago. I mentioned Dylan Jones earlier at Weber State. He's 6'5" and he does a little bit of everything, but he is one of their primary ball handlers there. He's maybe not the, you know, create his own shot in the same way as what you're describing, but he was probably their biggest threat on the opposing side as far as like from a point guard position that I could find to answer your question.
Okay. Yeah. And then K-State's got some guys like Keontae Johnson, Dazzy Sills, Naquan Tomlin, sometimes who can, you know, get to the basket pretty well. But it sounds like Montana State's got some rim protection. So they do they do really well against that kind of slashing type game?
I'd say so, yeah. They are pretty diligent in, you know, in moving their feet. They have a term called chesting up, which sounds exactly what it is. You know, of course, you want to go straight up, but you also want to make sure that your upper body is right up against somebody, not, you know, leaning too much into somebody. Things like that. If you're in the arena, you're probably going to hear chest up a lot. And they really take it to heart. They recognize that this is how they defend. You want to make somebody score over you. And if you have, if your arms are straight up, if your chest is straight up, that's going to be a lot tougher, especially when Bello is 6'9", Osabor is 6'9". Fuller is big-bodied, but he's and he's 6'5". Those are some of the guys that, you know, Kansas State's going to have to go through.
Yeah. Primarily. So, Eric, I mean, obviously there have been some games where K-State's missed a lot of the bunnies and it's cost them. You know, do you think that that's a concern?
It's a concern if you're missing bunnies, but I don't think the defense is necessarily what's doing that to you. You know, like a lot of this, we only have one player that really attempts to go through the chest of somebody else, and that's Keontae Johnson.
Yeah.
Everybody else is they're more finesse players, and we share the ball pretty well in the paint, actually. That a lot of those bunnies are just they're just short arm shots and that sort of thing. They're not because, you know, the defense really got in the way. Every time we've had players try to go up through a big guy, it ends up really well for us. I can think of explicit times where, you know, Cam Carter or Bebe or Ish has done it too, where they get in the paint and kind of get stuck. So they try to go through a guy and it's just, yeah, it's a non-starter. It gets swatted right back in their face. So, you know, it really gets back to that turnover thing. And are we sharing the ball without turning it over? Because if we're sharing the ball without turning it over, it, you know, that really neutralizes that staunch one-on-one defense. So it's, I'm curious to know how good help side defense is for Montana State, because that's going to be, I think, the bigger factor is does Montana State rotate really well defensively, because they're going to need to in order to defend us.
I think it's certainly a little better than last year. I think last year they were a little bit more susceptible to, you know, some of those skip passes or you know, quick rotating passes, things like that. This year I think they're a little bit more locked in that regard.
Primarily man-to-man defense. They throw zone at you. They throw junk defenses at you. What do they do?
I would expect to see a lot of man-to-man. You may see spurts of zone or press. Maybe especially right if you cross half court. Try to force you into a couple quick turnovers. You know, at some maybe seemingly random point in the game. Probably well before the end. But you know, if it's close, I would expect, you know, 2 to 3 minutes of just trying to force a couple turnovers right after you cross half court and see what you get. But I think for the most part, they'll revert back to their man-to-man.
Yeah.
With a lot of switching still.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see too. You know, this will be the first time, obviously, K-State has played an unfamiliar opponent in a while. Teams in the Big 12 know kind of what Marquise and Keontae are going to do. Obviously that's going to be the focus of the defensive game plan for Montana State, but there's only so much you can get from film. So it'll be interesting to see just how much emphasis they put on them, or maybe they'll have some more freedom to do stuff, or maybe they'll make the other guys beat them. I don't know. It's hard to predict.
That'll be an interesting point that you bring up there, Luke, because you hear the broadcasters talk about it, you know, having a second chance to see what these players are doing and that sort of thing. Coming back to, you know, a new opponent that, you know, we haven't seen them, of course, but they haven't seen us either. And I don't think folks really understand what Marquise does and what Keontae is capable of until you see it in person. Like, you just can't replicate that on the practice floor.
Yeah, there's a reason those two guys are both getting a lot of All-American honors right now.
Yeah.
So it's been cool to see. But Montana State, you know, obviously got some good postseason awards too. And you know, they got a lot of guys are doing well. And it seems like Danny Sprinkle has done a nice job there. And kind of he's a Montana State grad,
yep.
A couple of straight conference tournaments. He must be pretty beloved in Bozeman right now.
He is. Yeah, it's really easy for, you know, a kid who went to high school in Helena, the state capital, to come to Montana State. He went to the NCAA tournament as a player here his freshman year in 1995 to 96. And, you know, then he got into coaching primarily in California. After that, he was an assistant here briefly for a couple of years, then went back to California. And now he's back. This is his fourth season. His first year, the conference tournament ended, you know, as COVID canceled everything. And then the next 3 years, he's led them to the conference championship game. And they've obviously won the last two. And they only lost that first one by 10 points against that really good Eastern Washington team of a couple of years ago. Beloved is definitely the right word. I know that he's under contract for, I think, 3 more years beyond this one. But I think Montana State fans are maybe rightfully worried about how long they can feasibly keep him if he keeps winning like this. I have some thoughts about that also. And but for the time being and what he's done here, he's really changed what MSU basketball is. And Jabril Bello has been here that entire time also. And when you credit one, you have to kind of credit both, I think. But as far as the coaching conversation, he's very demanding. He's very intense, but he loves those players at the end of the day. And the players love him back, and they seem to really respond to that really demanding style of coaching. In general, beloved is the right word for sure.
Yeah. And it seems like he's got some good connections to different places, and that might be an issue, I guess, when you're thinking about trying to keep him if he could go elsewhere. But it also obviously is helping him bring in some high quality transfers, right? Is that
yeah, absolutely. A lot of the transfer guys this year really responded to what he had to say. You know, he knew the pieces that they had coming back, and you know, he sold them on, you know, if you come in here and you play the right way, like, we can do this again and you can be part of this. And they all bought into that to their credit, Fuller, Brown, and Ford and Battle before him and before them. Bello is also a transfer from a community college. He's gotten to play 4 years here. The three guys who they lost from last year's team were all transfers in. He did a really good job of recruiting talent to this school and implementing a culture here that's, the guys who are here now want to carry on. Whether Sprinkle is here beyond this year remains to be seen, but I certainly would not be surprised if somebody comes knocking.
Yeah, yeah. And so you mentioned this, you know, they played some high-quality opponents, Stack last year, Oregon and Arizona this year. I think they did get close. They took Colorado to overtime 2 years ago, but for the most part, those games against Power 5 teams have not been very close. You know, what do they have to do to make that leap? What's been the difference in those games?
Yeah, that Colorado game at the very beginning of last year was probably the closest that they came. And I remember watching that game and being really impressed because that was kind of the first game that I got to cover for them for real. Mm-hmm. Though I covered remotely, but even just watching them from afar, they seem to just be really intentional about doing things the right way, which of course, like most successful teams try to do that. But they seem to really believe in what they're trying to do. And if they're able to implement that, if they want to, or if they play the way that they want to, that'll take them a long way. It's already gotten them to this point. I asked, you know, of all your team's strengths, what do you want to keep doing most in the NCAA tournament? And the answer that I got most often was, we need to keep playing defense. That's saved them from themselves a couple times, but also it just makes it so difficult on everybody else. They know how good of a defensive team they can be when everybody is locked in. It's maybe silly to say, or easy to say in March, yeah, play defense. But with this team, with the hopes of pulling off that kind of March upset, yeah, you're eventually going to have to make some shots too, but you can survive a bit longer if you're playing the defense you know you're capable of.
Yeah, yeah. So, Eric, you know, this is the part we maybe normally make a prediction, but I feel like, you know, it's a big spread here. Kansas, this is a Kansas State podcast. I want to overlook Montana State, but Kansas State should win this game. So let's look ahead to Sunday. What do you think about the matchup with Kentucky real quick?
Who knows? Kentucky has been such a Jekyll and Hyde team this year. You know, they look like they had stuff coming together, and then all of a sudden they lose first round of the SEC tournament to Vandy. And it's like, what to expect? I mean, it's really weird. You have one of the you have legitimately one of the best players in the country in Shibue, you know, down there, you know, coming back from the season he had the year before and everything like that. He's still a dominant player, and you're not going to tell me that Cal doesn't have other talent around him. It's just God only knows what you're going to get out of Kentucky.
Yeah, that'll be interesting if we get that again. So. Well, real quick, before we let you go, I don't know. I did do a little research on the Bobcat versus Wildcats question. Mm-hmm. Do you guys know much about the differences between the two?
I can't say that I do.
Okay. So what I found was that, well, first of all, Wildcats can be used as a term to just talk about all Wildcats, but it's also apparently two subspecies. I think it's in Europe and Asia. So you got the wildcats, meet little, and then the bobcats is also, and then there's the lynx rufus here in North America. So I guess Montana State's got more of the American vibes going on, and I think a little bit bigger. But anyway, that we throw that out there. All right. Well, probably ought to let you go. Barker, I know people can read your stuff that BozemanDailyChronicle.com. I can follow you on Twitter at @ByParkerCotton. Anything else you want to promote or anything you got going on this week?
I got a couple stories, you know, coming out through the week. You know, just highlighting Jibril Bello again, highlighting, you know, Bozeman kid Carter Ash, who is probably the 15th guy on this team, but you know, it's really special for him to be on to the NCAA tournament with the team that he grew up rooting for. I've written a lot throughout the year about a lot of guys on this team. If fans just want to Google my name and a player's name, I've probably written about them to great length. The only other thing I can say maybe about this matchup is this probably requires a little bit more of a deep dive, but I'm not sure how many first round matchups there are going to be between a team that was projected to finish first in its conference and a team that was projected to finish last in its conference. And, you know, Montana State had to go through a whole year of, you know, getting everybody's best effort, trying to dethrone them. And nobody could do that. And Kansas State had to go through a whole year of trying to prove people wrong. And they did that. And I think that makes for a really exciting first round matchup here.
Yeah. Yeah. Should be fun. Just looking forward to seeing K-State in the tournament again.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Eric. Thanks, Barker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks very much for having you on. Me on. So, yeah.